John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Boy, what a pleasure this is to be able to say Hall of Famer Steve Hutchinson. Hall of Famer's been waiting for some time right now, and he joins us here on Schooled with the Professor. So kind of take us through the Saturday, you know, how it all started in the morning, and then finally when David Baker was able to knock on your door and basically said your life has now been changed.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. You know, you're down there, obviously you're in the room, so you know how heavy the situation is, what you know, all the emotions involved in it. But really it starts Friday. For me, it really wasn't Saturday morning, because Thursday night you get in and there's a cocktail event that the hall puts on that the finalists go to. And then Friday afternoon you have the Merlin Olsen luncheon that takes up, you know, the last hour of the morning, runs into about 2 o'clock. And then really from about 2:30 on Friday afternoon, for 24 hours, there is nothing. And so that 24 hours is like the longest 24 hours. Keep yourself occupied, trying to keep your mind from going on, going off on tangents on, you know, in this scenario, does this guy get in? What am I getting? You know, all that stuff. So really the waiting, the anticipation starts Friday. And so Saturday morning, unlike the last two Super Bowls where I was lucky enough to be a finalist in the Minnesota Super Bowl and then last year in Atlanta, the weather in South Florida is so just a tad bit better, you know?
Yeah, a little bit.
So I got up Saturday morning and got a cup of coffee, and my wife and I just kind of walked. We walked the beach. We walked nonstop, and it was nice to get out and kind of burn that nervous energy. But before you knew it, it was time to head back to the hotel, get ready, because regardless of what happens, you've got to get dressed like you're going to the NFL honor show. And so here you are, you know, getting ready and putting, you know, dress clothes on, putting a tie on, knowing very well that there's a good chance, you know, I'm not going to get in again. So you're kind of dressing for the party, knowing that you're almost dressing for your own funeral too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an added twist right there. But so I'm in the room at 2 o'clock. Of course, they say be in your room at 2. We hope to have the vote done by 2:30, and then 2:30 and between 2:30 and 3:30, you'll find out. You'll either get the call or the knock. Well, last year, I think what had happened was David came and knocked on everybody's door, and then he tried to personally call as many people as he could to let them know we didn't make it. So I think just so happened I was the last one on the call list last year. So it was very late for me to get any kind of, you know, I didn't know any kind of confirmation whether I'd made it or not until late in the afternoon last year. And so I was like one of the last ones to get the call. So here I am. It's about 3:25. You know, I'm just going on what they said. You'll know by 3:30. And I'm going, here we go again. Am I the last one to get called again? Or I'm going to have an extra 10 minutes of torture before I find out. And so, you know, I had gotten texts, you know, from people like, hey, you know, I think this person got a call, or this person had gotten a call. The fact that you haven't heard anything, I think, is good news. So then the you know, the anxiety kicks in even a little higher. And then about 3, I guess I was pacing back and forth, and then trying, you know, peeking out of the peephole of my room. And then about 3, I guess it was about 3:34, I looked through the peephole in my door. And you get that fishbowl effect, as everybody knows, looking through people. And I see two people standing on the opposite side of the hall, over in the corner of the thing. And I turned to my wife and I said, I think there's people out there. And it didn't look like it was normal hotel staff, like waiting to, you know, maybe service a room or anything. And as soon as I kind of turned around, I heard the knock. And instantly, you just, you know, it's all that anxiety, all that waiting, all those years of playing, all the years of high school football, all the two-a-days, all the sweat, all the pee-wee football, the whether you even like this sport or not. I think that all rushes in your head at once, because literally you're closing the book on a career that you've been playing your whole life. And that knock right there, right then, just kind of just does it instantly. It's hard to explain. It's a feeling, an emotional feeling, and just a sense of accomplishment and everything all at once, you know.
And it had to be. And so once you get that knock, and what was your reaction, your wife's reaction, and how did you handle it?
The first thing, and there, you know, my wife had taken a video. She had set up her phone in the room and kind of, she said, I don't know when it's going to come, if it's going to come, but I'm going to have it on video. So she had an hour and a half footage of me just pacing for most of it. But the video, you know, you don't realize what happened. It's a blur when you get the knock. But when you go back and look at it, my first reaction was, you know, my wife and my two kids that were in the room with me, we all kind of run, you know, come together and have a big emotional hug. And then it's just, I think even though my kids weren't old enough at the time of me playing to realize how much a part of your life that is and how much goes into it, they know from just having been around me and knowing this through this procedure the last couple of years, how special and how unique it is. And I think they were emotionally spent for me. And so we have a big group hug. And then, you know, of course I answer the door and David's there. And, you know, like you said at the beginning, he said, this is, you know, you're coming to Canton and you're ready for your life to be changed. And boy, he wasn't kidding, because like I said, you find that you just feel an instant sense of you're part of something bigger now, you know?
Well, how would you describe, because now you have all this reflection of the entire career from the very beginning, how would you describe a Steve Hutchinson Hall of Fame career?
Well, it's a little, I would say, admittedly, it's a little unique. It's a little different. Having left Seattle on the terms that I left Seattle with the way my contract played out, going into free agency and then going to Minnesota. I would say, you know, obviously you start playing the game because you want to win a Super Bowl and you want to be, you know, you're watching the Chiefs parade. You know, when I was watching it earlier in the week, and you just said, man, that's something I never got a chance to do. And I had the opportunity once in Seattle and didn't go our way. Got close again in Minnesota. Never got to the big game. We were one game away. Was in the NFC Championship game, but you know, at the end of the day, I would like to think I came in, you know, I was asked to do a job and hold a standard, and you know, standards aren't really my goal. I want to go above and beyond it. So I would like to think I came in, I had a part in helping the team get from, you know, where we were a 9-7, 8-8 team, working our way out, making it to a Super Bowl, then having gone to another team that was in a similar situation when I got there, you know, a team that had just changed coaches and, you know, wasn't having the success that they had hoped they'd have, and to be a part of another build and a rebuild there, and, you know, again, make it from 6-10 my first year in Minnesota to 12-4 just a couple years later. I'd like to think that at the end of the day, I did everything I could to help my team get better. And really, as an offensive lineman, that's really all you can say. And the great thing is about this league is really all you do is to play for the respect of the guys that came before you. You know, when you have, you know, that weekend last weekend in Miami was so great on so many levels, and not just because I got into the Hall of Fame or found out I was going in this fall. It was because I got to rub elbows a little extra time with guys that I grew up watching, and to have some of these guys kind of come up to you and say, man, you played the game right, or really respected how you played the game. You know, it's a great feeling. Cause then, you know, you were legit. You get legitimized by a guy that you looked up to. You just wanted to do it the right way. And then for him to say, you know what, you did it the right way. And that's all you can, at the end of the day, that's all you can ask for in this business.
Have you figured out who's going to be your presenter?
Yeah, so my center, Rob Toback, is going to be my presenter. That's, you know, he kind of, like I said in the beginning, he was kind of the guy that took me under his wing when I got there day one as a rookie, and really kind of showed me the ropes on how to be a pro along with Chris. But yeah, those, you know, the, that I figured that would be a fitting way to go, would be, you know, have a guy like that that I can show his, my appreciation to him for him helping me, you know, kind of kickstart my career on the right path and, you know, do all the things the right way.
Well, and of course, it's great to see one of my neighbors doing that for you, because again, it's so good to see
you. You guys can have cigars and talk over that.
There you go. Hey, Steve, congratulations. It's been overdue, but I'm glad it finally got in. Steve Hutchinson, Pro Football Hall of Fame. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Okay, Steve Hutchinson, what a great job. What a great player, and I'm glad to see he is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Hey, you can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app powered by the Dubin Law Group. And, of course, you can also rehear Steve Hutchinson on Schooled with a Professor. That's going to be on all through the weekend and all through every time. Just pick it up at any time. Coming back next, we'll get the report card out. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
And the report card we bring out every day. We look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We'll take the quotes, the anecdotes. We'll take the stories. We'll take the voices. And we'll take the social media impact of things. And we'll put a grade to it. And help us out with the grades is boy howdy. So boy howdy, put a grade right now on the seven game losing streak of the Husky basketball team. And now it's dropped below 500 after a 10-2 start.
It's an F, John. There's no other way to put it. This team has talent. They have underclassmen talent. They have upperclassmen talent. And they can't win in the Pac-12 at all after beating a ranked team to start the season. This is, I don't know how else to boil this down other than Mike Hopkins has failed the season. I mean, he has no players outside of his best young freshman, Isaiah Stewart, playing well. Nobody's playing well. An entire roster, an entire conference season has gone to be a disaster. It's not just one player's fault. It's not just because Jaden McDaniels is not bought in the program. That can't be the only reason why they're the last place team in the Pac-12 after being preseason ranked close to the top 25. This team should never be this way. And I can't think of anywhere else to point the finger than straight at Mike Hopkins, unfortunately, who was great his first 2 years, John. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, and I thought he was great, but it just seems like this school is just always hurt when it goes with a one-and-done player. I mean, how many different times did they have one-and-dones and then not make the NCAA tournament? It's like, and now this is going to be the same case. It's like, I guess, you know, you want to have to be able to get the one-and-dones to come in, but boy, it just seems to have a negative effect as opposed to a positive effect.
You know, it's absolutely true, and it's generally right, but then again, their best player is Isaiah Stewart. He's a one-and-done guy, and he is not at all the reason why this team is bad.
No.
And so I think that there's a little bit of nuance here to say that if you find the right guy, it's going to work. And I think Mike Hopkins bit off more than he could chew this year, and I think we're seeing the negative effects of that.
Yeah, that is true. So what do we have on the report card?
On the report card today, we have, this is news that, I guess it's not really news, but it's a report from the New York Post that has come out in the last about hour or so, that Alex Rodriguez, we all know him, he has emerged as a potential buyer of the New York Mets franchise. Obviously, he'd be part of an ownership group that would purchase the Mets. But how are we grading Alex Rodriguez as a potential owner? Would the MLB want someone with as checkered of a past as Alex Rodriguez has as a baseball player owning one of their 30 franchises?
I'm kind of giving it a C, and I don't think they would have a problem with that. I mean, Derek Jeter may have had less problems, but he's going. But the reason I'm going to give it a C is that, you know, the last player to buy the team was Derek Jeter, and look how bad that team is right now, and look how it seems to be mismanaged. And I think that, you know, can it be the same way if Alex goes in there and takes over? So, yeah, I'm going to give it a C. I need to see more. I need to see what the plan is. I've always liked Alex, but, you know, he's got the money. We'll see if he has the resources to be able to make it work.
Yeah, I don't like this story either, John. I'm going to give it an F just because Alex Rodriguez is not at all going to be the majority financial stakeholder in this deal. Just like Derek Jeter wasn't the majority financial stakeholder. Just like Magic Johnson wasn't the stakeholder in L.A. Just like I don't think Michael Jordan was the major financial stakeholder with the Bobcats when he purchased them. This is all just using somebody else's profile to hide the actual mastermind and the actual person who's putting up the money for this thing. So I don't like that idea because I would rather the person who's actually running it be the face on it so that I can have a finger to point at instead of pointing it at the scapegoat, a figurehead guy like Derek Jeter or Alex Rodriguez. And then on top of this, John, you're absolutely right with this this background stuff with steroids and lying and cheating. Alex Rodriguez has not proved himself to be a man of integrity. I can't say that that is a main marker for what it takes to be an owner in professional sports, see Jim Crane. But I think that I would rather not see a guy who's made most of his legacy based on being a controversial figure be a guy who's pointed to as sort of a pinnacle of respect in the league by being a team owner. I don't like it. I hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah, Alex Rodriguez, him being in the same division as Derek Jeter would be pretty interesting. Those two guys, they don't really like each other, even though they were teammates for all those years in New York. So those Mets-Marlins games, there'd be a little more intrigue to that. Be interesting to see, too, if Alex Rodriguez tries to continue being a broadcaster. I don't think he could do that while being an owner of a team. I mean, there was some conflict of interest with Jessica Mendoza, who was in the ESPN booth, and she just had a consultant role in the Mets front office. I mean, having the entire team owner calling games of other teams or maybe even the Mets team, that's a pretty fine line.
But, right? John, for sports radio's sake, we would love to have Alex Rodriguez as a team owner, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't we constantly be just be wondering whether or not his team was on steroids the entire time? Like, if he had hooked them up with Anthony Galeo 2.0, like, everyone would be bringing all sorts of, like, giant cardboard cutouts of needles just to make fun of that team. So in that sense, I would be here for it.
Also on the report card today, how do you mention Jim Crane a little bit ago? Well, Cody Bellinger, reigning National League MVP today, he had some very strong words from Dodgers camp about what it was like facing the Astros, most notably in that 2017 World Series. Here is what Bellinger had to say.
I thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. I mean, these guys were cheating for 3 years. You know, I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17.
Woo.
Everyone knows they stole the ring from us. I know personally I lost respect for those guys. I think I would say everyone in the show in the big leagues lost respect for those guys. I don't know what human hits a walk-off home run against Aroldis Chapman to send your team to the World Series. And one has the thought to say, don't rip my jersey off. But to go in the tunnel, change your shirt, and then come out and do your interview. Like, that makes no sense to me. It makes zero sense to me. Because I know me. Gary Sanchez said yesterday, you can rip my shirt off, my pants off. I sent my team the World Series off for Aroldis Chapman in the ninth inning at home. You can do, you know, I'm going crazy.
How are we grading Cody Bellinger with taking direct shots at the Astros?
I like it. I give it an A. I was strong. I mean, I think that really to the point. I mean, you can see that he wanted to even get the anecdotes in there, the hatred that he has. I think that's fantastic.
Whoa, A+. Way to go, Cody Bellinger. And by the way, conspiracy theorists like me loves Cody Bellinger because now that puts in this whole realm, this idea of buzzers, which most of baseball and baseball's cronies would like everyone to believe is a ridiculous, ludicrous claim that can't possibly be true. This guy won the MVP, and he is sitting here telling you he believes that team is using buzzers and has used buzzers. Like, don't tell me this is impossible. There are current players in baseball who think it is. So I am all for this. But, John, I have discovered this morning what I actually want to have happen on the baseball field of the Houston Astros. Are you ready?
Okay, go ahead.
I want, at some point in time during this next season, an opposing pitcher who is facing the Astros to stop the game, point to his manager, have them all come out and accuse the Astros of cheating again in a game. Stop the game. All the benches have to clear and come out. We're going to have this big issue, and it explodes. There's a fight on the field because they are actually accused in-game of cheating. I think that would be one of the coolest things and the most impactful things that we'd have seen in baseball in the last 50 years.
I like it.
And even if it's totally baseless, yeah, I'd be for it too. Just to plant that seed of these guys can't be trusted no matter what time and place they are. Yeah, I'm all for it, Howdy. Totally for it. That's it for today's gradebook, Joe.
Okay, and be sure to check out the Professor's Notebook on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we'll get together with text questions. Text us at 710-710, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Okay, it's time for your text questions. You can text us at 710-710. So, Curtis, what do we have?
From the 425, John, they want to know, which teams do you think will have the most interest in Andy Dalton?
I think there's going to be interest in Chicago. I think there's going to be interest in New England if Tom Brady leaves. Could be some interest down in Tampa. So I think he can have a pretty good market. I think that in a trade is going to be something similar to like the Joe Flacco deal of last year, probably like a fourth-round pick, and you can get him pretty cheap. He's got a reasonable contract. So I'd say right now that could be a good possibility. But, again, he'll have a pretty good market on a trade.
From the 206, they want to know, what do you think Ndamukong Suh will get in free agency?
I think probably 8, maybe 7 million. I think the number is going to keep going down. I mean, last year he got around 9, and he did a good job. I mean, I think they'd like to keep him in Tampa, but it is somewhere between 7 and 9 million. And no, I don't think they should bring him here.
From the, let's see here, from the 206, or actually from the 360, they say, Happy Valentine's Day, Professor. What is your favorite type of chocolate?
I'm not a big dessert one, but I guess just the regular type of chocolate. Maybe a little something in there, but not a big piece, but just a little piece. But I'm not a big dessert person.
253 wants to know, where do you see Husky tight end Hunter Bryant going in the draft? I think Daniel Jeremiah had him as top-ranked tight end.
Yeah, number one or number two. I think it's going to be probably more in the second round. And, I think a good fit would be a team like New England, because they need a tight, because the tight end situation there is about as bad as it is in the league. And so I think that could be a good fit. Maybe you can look at, I go for New England. And then, Chicago's going to be on the lookout for a tight end. So that could be a fit. Detroit, that could be a fit too.
From the 206, they want to know, John, is Dwayne Brown's heir apparent currently on the Seahawks roster, or will that be somebody they get in the future?
I think it's somebody they have to get in the future, because you saw Jamarco Jones try to fill out that one spot and it didn't work out that well. Maybe you could have George Fant as a possibility if they can re-sign him. I know he wants to go to play left tackle, but of course maybe play that another year, play right tackle this year. But I think more than likely you can say that the left tackle is not on the current roster.
From the 425, they want to know, John, chicken noodle soup or tomato soup with your grilled cheese sandwich?
I'd say chicken noodle soup. My wife would go with the tomato soup, but I kind of switch it around there.
360 wants to know, John, do you think Marshawn Lynch has a future in the NFL as a fullback?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't really think he has much of a future in the NFL, because I don't think that at this stage it was great for him to come back. But you look at a back right now that if he would have a regular gig, he'd probably be averaging 3.2 yards a carry. Again, it was great for him to do what he did. I thought he certainly was very helpful for the team. But no, I think that the career is pretty close to being over.
425, they're looking for an explanation on what the latest is with the CBA talks between the NFL and the NFL Players Association.
Well, it looks like they had a meeting, and they're going to have a meeting on Thursday and just vote on the thing. And so they're going to vote on the and it could be defeated, because right now I don't think they have the votes. They went back to see if they can get a few other little extra things, but I don't necessarily think that the owners were going to do much more. But it comes down to Thursday, where they're going to have an assemblage of all the player reps, and also have all the executive committee, and vote on the thing one way or another. And so I think we'll know by Thursday whether there's going to be a deal or no deal.
Deal or no deal. We'll get Howie Mandel on the case. From the 253, they want to know, what percentage chance do you give the Seahawks on re-signing Jadeveon Clowney?
I give it like about a 55%, 60% chance, because I think he still wants to be here, and it would be a good fit if he could stay here. Again, the competition is going to be pretty good, because he's one of the best defensive players out there. He's either 6th, 7th, or 8th among the edge pass rushers. May not be the sack guy, but he's a really good player both on the run and disruptor. So, I'd give it better than 50%.
206 wants to know, what kind of number do you see Patrick Peterson getting from the Cardinals?
That would have to be probably 16, maybe 16 and a half, somewhere in that neighborhood, because the price is going to go up. I mean, 15 right now is a top dog, and Josh Norman just got cut. But I think, 16 to 16 and a half.
It's interesting with Patrick Peterson because he wanted a trade a couple of years ago, but then backed off on that, got suspended last year for the first six games, came back, played his normal self, but Patrick Peterson, kind of a weird last couple of years with the Cardinals organization, but they're letting bygones be bygones.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he's too important of a player. They've got to re-sign him.
Absolutely. From the 206, I mean, we're just kind of waiting on this now, but they say, where does the professor think Greg Olsen signs?
I think it's going to be Seattle. Now, again, it still could be networks. I mean, he may decide to retire and go into the networks. I thought it's kind of suspicious that he's now holding off the decision till Saturday because he was wanting to do it by Friday. But, I think the Seahawks have a good chance if he's going to still continue playing. I think he does want to continue playing.
360 wants to know, John, how would you change the NFL overtime rules?
The big thing is I'd go back to sudden death. I would not want. I mean, I think that you don't have to have the ball that second time. If you want to drive down and get the field goal, you drive down and get the field goal. And they have it set up because the big thing I'm always concerned about is ties. I don't like ties. And let's say with the 10 minute, I would take away the 10 minutes and put it at 15. Because that was ridiculous to shorten it by five. I mean, what's the advantage of that? Because if you, let's say you start with a field goal drive, then you have another field goal drive, that's going to eat up 8 or 9 minutes. And it's going to leave maybe 1 minute to avoid a tie. So I'd go back and just say, hey, first team that scores in overtime, sudden death, you win.
425 wants to know, John, do you anticipate Houston Astros players being thrown at this season in retaliation?
I think so, yeah. I mean, again, that's going to be the sad part about this, is that the team that gets mad at them and does that, we're going to get more problems than maybe the Astros. Because, again, if you get the ejections and you're going to lose your pitcher and all those different things. But, no, I think there's going to be enough anger that it's definitely going to spill over and cause problems.
From the 253, we kind of touched on this in Behind the Lines earlier at 10:45. They want to know, do you see Josh Norman being a possible fit in Seattle?
I'm not as thrilled on it. I got to make a couple calls to see how much his game has dropped off. I mean, I think he's going to be too expensive because he's going to go someplace and, he's making 15. You figure he's going to probably still want more than 10, and they can't do that. Because remember, if you do that, then you're going to have problems getting Shaquille Griffin signed. And so I'd have to think that, you explore it, but you don't go too hard into it.
From the 425, they want to know, where do you see Janoris Jenkins ending up?
He's one that I think Seattle should really look at because he's a good player. And, I think he could play slot if necessary. And I think that, right now he's still property of the New Orleans Saints, but the Saints are probably going to cut him. But I would take a look at old Jackrabbit.
From the 206, they want to know, John, will Zach Taylor return to Cincinnati after the 2020 season?
You mean the head coach?
Yeah, the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, he's still the head coach. He signed a multi-year contract, signed a four-year, five-year deal, so he's going to be back next year. There's no question in anybody's mind about that.
After the 2020 season.
Oh, after? I know. I think he's still going to keep his job. I mean, you notice that they stayed with Marvin Lewis, and that's a franchise that really does not like to break into the middle of a contract and fire somebody.
From the 509, they want to know, John, have you seen pictures of Felix Hernandez in a Braves jersey? It looks ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. I've not seen it. I'm sure it does look strange. But again, you knew that was going to happen. I mean, he was making $27 million here last year, and that wasn't going to go. But yeah, it's going to be different to see Felix in a different uniform because, I mean, the king in Atlanta is different.
Yeah, I saw a picture yesterday of Felix in a Braves uniform. It is one of the weirdest things you could ever see. It's always strange seeing those guys who wear a uniform for so long put on another team's uniform. We saw it with Richard Sherman in the 49ers. We've seen it Earl Thomas with the Ravens. Felix, the next guy to join that group with the Braves, so very weird stuff. John, that is it for text questions today.
Okay, and so... Also, you want to make sure that you check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. Professor Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, our Daily Dose of the Groz. Dave Grosby coming up next.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
It's time for our Daily Dose of the Groz. Dave Grosby joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. And so, boy, I tell you, things are moving fast in Olympia. Looks like the House has already approved the betting bill of legalizing sports gambling. And now I guess the Senate will go over it, and it could very well come very quickly. I think it's a good thing.
You know that I agree with you, John. And the only question I have is how long it will take to implement it. And I don't see anything that makes me think that it's not going to pass the Senate. I mean, you never know. It's the state of Washington, and you know, we watched them legislate the Sonics out of town, basically. So, I mean, anything can happen. But I would agree with you that I think it looks very good.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing. But yeah, the timetable and how it's going to go, and I think I'm just amazed that it just kind of came out of the blue and is happening so quickly.
I think part of it is that it was bipartisan, and in this day and age, John, that's a word that's not used very often.
Yeah, that's true.
There seems to be very little that the sides can agree on politically, on the local level, on the state level, on the national level. But this is one that seemed to have some bipartisan support, and so I'm fingers crossed. I think that it looks good for those who want to see it, and it'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think that's going to be a good thing. One thing that's not good right now, the Husky basketball team, 6-point loss to USC last night, 7 in a row. Now they've got a losing record of 12-13. It just doesn't get any better.
Tough night for both teams down there. Washington State took UCLA to overtime, but wound up falling. And yeah, from Washington, I would call this one exceedingly disheartening, even though USC, I think, is like 16-7 now, and they've really turned things around. I mean, we talked about it yesterday, John. For Washington to get back and to start playing better, it's got to start with defense, period, end of story. And that was good last night. I mean, they had a 30-25 lead at the half. Their defense was solid. They held them under 65 points for the game. But I don't know what to call it. They reverted to what they've been doing in the second half in terms of their offense. They just reduced themselves to chucking up three-pointer after three-pointer. That 5-point lead vanished in nothing flat. USC caught them and then had them. I think Washington went 7 or 8 minutes without even scoring. They just offensively forgot what they did in the first half. I mean, they had the formula. I mean, that first half was the formula for them to be successful, and it started with defense, and it finished with, you know, moving the ball around on offense and generating assists and doing all that, and then they just simply stopped doing it in the second half. And I get the sense, just in reading it and looking at the body language, that for everyone involved, this was a truly disheartening defeat, because you're right now, 7 in a row, you've got a losing record, you have basically forgotten how to win. And UCLA is not going to be any easier over the weekend.
No, and that's going to be on Saturday night. And, of course, not good at all. But, yeah, I think that this has just been a major, major disappointment. And now they've got to try to see how they bounce back next year and what they do, because, again, they're going to lose a couple freshmen to the NBA, and yeah, not good at all. And, of course, I don't know, did you watch much of the game last night?
The Washington game?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I watched because I'm curious to see if they can turn it around. And I remind you that like we say, even though it looks very bleak, the college basketball gives everyone an opportunity for new life at the end of this month, and they will have that if they can square themselves away and just remember what it takes to win. And I thought they put together a piece yesterday, but the fact of the matter is that they're far away from it right now. And this is the pitfall of having a young team. Hasn't built up any resiliency together. They have no history of bouncing back together and don't even know each other that well basketball wise. So, we'll see. I mean, like I said, I hate to rule anyone out when you've always got the tournament, you've always got hope, you've always got chance. But, Washington does not look like they have the makeup to take advantage of that opportunity.
No. Well, one story that emerged today is that Alex Rodriguez is contemplating buying into the New York Mets. Thoughts on that one?
Perfect. The guy who was doing selfies when his girlfriend was on stage at the halftime of the Super Bowl. Well, he's got the money.
Yeah.
We know that much. And, The Mets thing is just such a mess because the Wilpons were supposed to sell. They didn't. We watched them make that disastrous trade with the Mariners. You know, this is a team that was
that was in the World Series not that long ago. I mean, in this decade, but, you know, still looks like they're stumbling all over themselves. You know, I don't know if this is, you know, this has got real money. So, I mean, he can buy a significant piece of it. I don't know if this is just buying a small piece of it, but, you know, it just would figure that, that he and the Mets would kind of belong together, you would think. So I don't know that, you know, he's it's just, like I said, it's a weird story because the Wilpons are trying to sell. So I don't know how that would impact the majority ownership or minority ownership or not, but more power to him. I mean, he's got time on his hands, I suppose.
Yeah, he does that, and of course, between J-Lo, the TV network, and everything else. I mean, got a lot going, but that one just came out of the blue. It's like A-Rod owning parts of the Mets. It's like, wow. I mean, it's not worked too well for Derek Jeter, that's for sure, with Miami.
No, and he's, you know, running things down there, and it's not yet. Although, look, I'll concede this. He may have a long-term plan, so, you know, it'd be one thing if he had gone down there and had spent a ton of money and brought in a slew of free agents and, you know, made terrible trades like the Mets did and, you know, found yourselves with a giant payroll and a losing baseball team. They don't have that. They're trying to rebuild down there. So I'll, at this point, Jeter still gets a pass. We'll see though. I mean, you know, it's an interesting legacy of superstar players getting involved in management and you would expect in ownership that to increase as the years go by. I mean, there have been success stories like John Elway. There have been guys who have certainly failed at it. And I think the jury, in fairness to Jeter, the jury's still out. That was a total tear down and rebuild, and they're in the process of it.
Yeah, no doubt. And so we'll watch and see how that one goes and where it goes.
So what are we going to hear about Greg Olson is what I'm wondering.
Is
he going to make a decision today? And I'm curious, you know, he'd be an interesting fit here, wouldn't he? I mean,
yes.
to me, the attitude of the Seahawks, and I'm sure this is what their attitude is it didn't require Russell Wilson, you know, reminding him that he's in his prime and this is the time. I mean, they were so close, a half yard away from having the home field advantage in the NFC playoffs. There's no point in you know, I'm not going to say not to build for the future, but next year's the year. I mean, there's no reason to not try and put together an extra piece or two to make next year happen, and Greg Olson could be an interesting piece there, I think.
Oh, I agree. And it looks like he's going to make the decision tomorrow or announce the decision tomorrow, so you'd have to think he's deciding today, and I think they have a legitimate chance of getting him.
I thought it was interesting to see that the Redskins cut Josh Norman today.
Yeah, and Paul Richardson, former Seahawk.
Well, Paul Richardson, they don't really have a need of wide receiver, but Josh Norman to me is an interesting character. I mean, there are a lot of baggage, a lot of negatives, but you know, one of the things that I'm not going to judge a guy is having a bad year in Washington, because
no.
Washington always has bad years. It was an interim coach. It was a bad situation. I mean, he's the sort of veteran that probably has something to prove yet. Might be an interesting guy for the Seahawks to take a look at as well, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that it could be a consideration, but I still think there's going to be enough of a market that is going to be a little bit too pricey, and that's what they can't do because, you know, you want somebody to maybe challenge Trey Flowers, but you don't want to stunt the growth of Trey Flowers because, again, you have, at some point now, you have to start working on a contract for Shaquille Griffin, and if you overspend on a cornerback, it's going to cost more on Griffin, or it could cost you Griffin.
Right. I mean, I'm not worried about them having their priorities straight for sure.
Yeah. But again,
I mean, that's one thing that we don't have to worry about with the Seahawks.
Doing anything, they got to put the money into Clowney. I think that's the guy that they really got to sign.
If not into Clowney, into two pieces that can approximate his value. I mean, to me, it's an incredibly interesting choice because, you know, Clowney was impactful but not productive.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair way to put it, John?
I thought he was great. I mean, because again,
he was very impactful and he was hurt.
Yeah,
and he played hurt. You know, I mean, you know, you don't have to wonder about any of the X factors with him. So I just his health. I would assume. I mean, that would be the only thing you'd be concerned about with him because he gave you maximum effort, and he that 49er game, he tantalized you with the kind of ability that very few guys have.
No, but I thought he was really fantastic in what he was able to do, and again, I think he's such a valuable guy. So, what do you have going this weekend?
Be interested in watching the XFL's debut in Seattle. It looks like it's going to be a good one.
Yes, indeed, it does look good.
Nice crowd, and I'll be curious to see generally ratings-wise how week two goes for the league.
Yeah, I mean, week one was fantastic. Now we can see if they can stay at that level. And I think the quality of play will get better. But I thought it was pretty good to start out.
John, enjoy President's Day on Monday.
Okay, yeah. So we won't be back until Tuesday. I'll be back tomorrow at 8 o'clock with your phone calls from 8 to 9. And no show Monday. So I'll be back on Tuesday at 10. Dave Grosby, thanks for joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.